Wherever you are in the world, thank you for tuning in to this episode of The Badminton Podcast, a community for badminton players, by badminton players, proudly brought to you by Velan. We talk all things badminton and aim to inspire you to be better in your game and in life by celebrating the people and stories of our global badminton community, whether they be past or present professional players, social players, officials or fans.
We're your hosts, Jeff and Henry, and we love badminton. From the bottom of our hearts, we'd just like to say thank you to everyone who has listened to, shared, and been part of the podcast. It wouldn't be possible without you all. If you do enjoy our episodes and can spare just a couple of dollars each month, you can really help keep the podcast going by supporting us on Patreon. Just visit www.patreon.com/thebadmintonpodcast. We'll leave the link in the description. Hey everyone, this is part two of a two-part series with Leon Jake Lim. Make sure you tune into the previous episode so you can catch up on what we were talking about. Don't miss out, it's a ripper of an episode.
Everyone has inherent capabilities, whatever they may be. But as we go through life, the environment gives us external stimuli that stimulates certain parts of our nervous system that causes growth. So we may go through life not being able, ever being exposed to certain stimuli and exposed to a lot of one set of stimuli, right? So it could be the case that there are certain parts of ourselves that are never unfolded or revealed or developed, maybe because of our environment, right? So, but what basically what I'm trying to say is that every person has inherent nature and they have their interaction with the environment. And the interaction with environment interacts with our nervous system and it triggers something, whatever that may be as well. It triggers growth. So what that implies is that every person has strengths, every person has weaknesses.
So Leon, my question for you is, in terms of the questions you were asking when you started your philosophy journey and even now, like what were the key questions that were driving you to learn more about philosophy?
Okay. The key questions that drive me to learn philosophy. I think we always stem from being in school. So in school, right, we sort of learn that it's very non-liberal art, right? We learn science, physics, chemistry, mathematics, right? And I think the quizziness part of it, like there was always something a bit more out there. And I think there's always something more out there. And I think I was, when I was a kid, I was plagued with certain questions, like the very classical question, like, oh, you know, like, does God exist? And if he exists, then like, why is God seemingly so non-existent in our lives? And then actually at one point, I also asked my question, why am I even playing badminton? Because I was training so much, they came to the point like it became a little bit meaningless as well. So that was actually when I was reading philosophy and I came across Bruce Lee's statement about expressing oneself honestly, right? And then I started to sort of meditate on that, for lack of a better word. And I would say I was always interested in philosophy for the sake of philosophy when I was young because of my inquisitiveness. It was only really when I started to apply philosophy and really think about the meaning of things, especially the meaning of badminton as well, because of how I am, I also questioned myself. Because at that point, I was like 23, 24. And of course, like I already knew, like I wasn't able to reach the like a level where you could actually make badminton a career out of. So of course, at that point, I was also not pursuing that, but I wanted to push myself as hard as possible to see how far I can reach. But I was also asking myself this question, why play badminton? Right, like what for? Like I can just go work out in the gym and get hinged, right? Right. So why badminton, right? So then I started to think about these things that I'm talking to you about. Badminton is sort of like this facet where one is able to balance themselves out and sort of integrate themselves. You know, pursuing, I would say that when you sort of pursue badminton for the sake of badminton and not because you want to win, then it becomes a whole different world altogether, because then you don't really suffer from disappointment. You don't really suffer from that from so much. So then it puts you a whole different field from like someone that's a professional player or there's someone in the national team, because I was no longer there already, right? I had to find a whole new meaning for badminton in my life. And that was when I started to realize the significance of badminton and how that it can complement all the other aspects of my life and keep me grounded and keep me balanced as a human being. Because we are not just our brain, right? We are also a body as well. And the mind always follows the body and the body always follows the mind.
No, look, that really resonates with me because I guess like I never really got to semi-pro or pro level. It's for me, it's mostly always been social badminton, recreational badminton. So badminton as a purpose for me has always been as an outlet. Of course, when it came to competitions, it's always been, you know, of course, I want to win. I don't like losing. But when it comes to social badminton, actually playing weekly or every, you know, twice a week or whatever it might be, it's just out of pure joy. Like the purpose for me is to actually just to enjoy the sport and like you said, balance out the rest of my life as well.
So Leon, continuing on with the philosophical questions, I've got a really tricky one for you. And I guess it's something that I've asked myself, and I'm pretty sure every single human being on earth has asked this at one stage or another. Henry included, maybe.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
So in terms of this question, it is, what is the meaning or the purpose of life? And it's a huge question that I know you can't answer in just one podcast episode or in one sentence, but I'd love to just hear what your thought processes are around such a complex question.
Okay. So I have two ways of answering this question. Okay. They're not mutually exclusive. So I would say that there are two ways of looking at this question. There's the worldly way, and then you have the spiritual approach, and you have the worldly approach as well. You can have both, they're not mutually exclusive. So I would say that in the worldly sense, I would say that the meaning of life is to achieve one's potential, whatever that may be. So I actually read this book called The Tree of Knowledge, and it talks about basically, the book starts on like the very cellular level and then talks about the person at the more psychological and the societal level as well. And everyone is built differently and everyone has inherent capabilities, whatever they may be. But as we go through life, the environment gives us external stimuli that stimulates certain parts of our nervous system that causes growth. So we may go through life not being able ever being exposed to certain stimuli and exposed to a lot of one type of stimuli, for example. Sorry, one set of stimuli, right? So it could be the case that there are certain parts of ourselves that are never unfolded or revealed or developed, maybe because of our environment, right? So, but what I'm trying to say is that every person has inherent nature and they have their interaction with the environment. And the interaction with the environment interacts with our nervous system and it triggers something, whatever that may be as well. It triggers growth. So what that implies is that every person has strengths, every person has weaknesses. Sometimes if we are pursuing something that we naturally are not that good in inherently, then we actually would plateau. But if you are inherently very, very good at something, and you expose yourself to this stimuli that sort of reinforces this growth all the time, then you become extremely good at it. Okay, so what does that imply? That implies that, number one, we're all different. Number two, we have some things that we are very good in and some things we are very bad in, right? And so it's up to us as human beings to sort of explore that through trial and error. You know, of course, in the beginning of our lives, our parents play a very instrumental role in for us to explore that. And after that, when we become adults, then we have to take on full responsibility as well for us to see, like, you know, where is our potential in? Where does our potential lie? Because I also, having observed people as well, I think a lot of people, they go through their life sometimes ending with regret because they never pursued this or they never pursued that. And then it's too late already. So I do think that in the worldly sense, what gives us wholesomeness, what gives us joy is trying to find that potential. You know, like maybe the best you, for example, is a fireman, whatever it may be, or the best you is an athlete, or the best you is a school teacher trying to teach kids, you know, for example. maybe that is so-called your calling, right? Okay, so then you have the worldly approach of my idea, the first one. Of course, the second one would be the spiritual side as well. What is the meaning of life in the spiritual side? So I'm a Christian. And so for me, in the spiritual sense, the meaning of that part actually informs the whole part, right? The worldly part. So it sort of reminds me, I'm always aware that in the end of the day, I believe that there's a God and that God sent his one and only son in the form of a human being to our world, that he died for our sins, and that all we need to do is to acknowledge that we are sinful beings and to accept that he died for our sins. And so that because just by believing in him, we've already paid that debt already, and then we can have eternal life.
Awesome. Good answer.
Thank you.
I feel like I should probably get Jeff's thoughts on this as well. Seeing as Jeff has postulated this question himself, I asked you to answer this tough question. I'm sure Jeff has thought about this for some time or has thought about this deeply. So I think it'd be interesting if Jeff is interested in sharing his thoughts on that answer as well.
Okay. Well, I have it written literally right in front of Henry right now. And it encapsulates very much the same things. When you break it down, it does have those two elements. It's got the thing outside of myself, which is, I'm not Christian. I don't have a particular religion, I would say, but I do believe there's something bigger than myself out there or bigger than humans out there. And so my meaning or my purpose is to embrace that, or to be, I say, a gift of God in the sentence that I have in front of me. And doesn't have to be God, like the Christian God or any particular God. It's more just like I'm contributing to something bigger than myself. And then the other parts are to enjoy the beauty of life, which is basically to enjoy life, and then to do what I love as well. So that's kind of like, I guess, the passion. It's the reaching the potential. So yeah, I think it encapsulates it very similarly to what you've actually said.
Cool. I think it's quite interesting that all of us inherently have in this intuitive urge to sort of explore this question. Every single human being. I think that's quite interesting.
Henry, last one, it's on you. What's yours?
Oh, yeah. I haven't really thought about this for a long time until you brought it up earlier. But yeah, I think it's when I ask myself that question, I always feel like I shouldn't be asking that question because it's not really up to the life to give you purpose, right? Or like, it's not up to the life to give you meaning. It's up to you to give life meaning. And then maybe it comes back to what you both are talking about, right? Yeah, what is the meaning of life? What is the meaning that you have defined for your life? And that's, yeah, whether it comes back to what Jeff said or what you have said, Leon, if the purpose that I go throughout and what I feel like my underlying driver in life is, has always been growth. And so that I feel like, yeah, having a purpose or meaning in life is always defined by the individual rather than there needs to be a strictly correct answer or not. But yeah, like you, I mean, you're religious, Leon, Jeff, you believe in something greater than yourself. And I guess I would also be in Jeff's sort of camp in that I believe that there's something greater than us, but I don't know what that is. But yeah, I think if we were to define, you know, what is the meaning of life, I think it's an individual answer. It's something that you give meaning to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Thanks for sharing. That's pretty cool.
So I guess if we move on or change gears again to investing now, Leon, investing seems like a really big part of your life. And it would be interesting to know, I think Jeff and I have sort of explored investing, definitely not to the level that you are involved in investing. But is there something that you can tell us about investing that we don't know?
Now, just a quick word from our sponsors. The Badminton Podcast is brought to you by Volant. Volant was first born out of our frustration with the confusing, bright, and unsightly clothes and equipment that we saw in the badminton world. But now, it's so much more than that. Our mission is to accelerate the growth of badminton by providing players with products that enhance their love for the sport.
All in all, it's high quality gear that makes you look and feel great on and off the court. So make sure you check us out at volantbadminton.com and follow us on our socials at volantbadminton.
So, okay, I would say that the first thing that comes to my mind is that investing actually, did you know that investing, right, is actually an integration as well, and an integration of many multidisciplines. Did you know that?
Which discipline are you referring to?
So, actually like an intersection between like psychology, philosophy, mathematics, physics, business, economics, accounting, all these things. And so that's also why I was also investing became quite appealing to me, because I think as a person, I've always been much more of a generalist than a specialist. So I would say that that's why investing also became quite appealing to me, because you actually have to be quite proficient in many different aspects of these disciplines. Yeah.
Well, the key one that I heard there that I probably wasn't so familiar one is physics.
Physics. Everything else rang a bell. I'm like, yep. The physics.
So perhaps you could tell us more about the physics aspect of investing.
Okay. So actually in physics, it teaches you like, what's important about physics is teach you about models. It teaches you like the importance of frameworks, the importance of models. So for example, in physics, you learn about mechanics, right? And in physics, you also learn about the movement of subatomic particles, for example. And so that also actually gives the student a framework of how models work and how models intertwine one another. So in physics, you learn about the Newtonian laws of physics, and you also learn about the principles that govern subatomic particles. And they're very different, right? And of course, in physics, you learn about Einstein's law of relativity as well. And so, of course, yeah, interestingly enough, I've also heard like there's some universities who teach physics and philosophy alongside one another. So I thought that was also quite interesting. But what's important is that physics, like I would say in contrast to all the other subjects as well, teaches you models and how they actually relate to one another. And I think that's also very important in investing actually.
Yeah, I think, I guess on that multidiscipline side of things, I remember Charlie Munger, in a book that he wrote, or that was not he wrote it, it's the Almanac of Charlie Munger, he talks about jurisdictional boundaries when it comes to life and investing, and that we shouldn't be restricted by jurisdictional boundaries when it comes to tackling challenges or problems in life, whether that be investing or not.
It also sounds like Bruce Lee, right? When you think about it.
Yeah, it does. All that wisdom. But yeah, it really does. It's interesting that you brought up physics and just, I guess, mental models in general, and like how you can take a mental model, but perhaps isn't even in physics, maybe it's in biology, and you can take that and place that into investing or whatever it might be, and sort of challenge the status quo to look at things a little bit differently. So now the time of recording is the 26th of September, 2022. For those listeners that might be listening, I don't know, 5 years, 10 years later, we're talking with Leon here, who is an entrepreneur, a philosopher, and an investor. But right now, the markets, I guess from my perspective, they're looking a bit shaky. They're looking a bit bearish. How do you interpret what's going on in the markets at the moment, Leon? Just your overall perspective, global markets, and maybe even because you're in Malaysia, I guess for listeners who, we do have some listeners from Malaysia, maybe your take on what's happening in the Malaysian market.
Actually, the whole world, all of the economies all over the world, the developing market as well as like some of the major markets, well, they're all connected to the US. So basically whatever happens macroeconomically also trickles down and affects all the other markets, including the developed markets and the emerging markets as well. So yes, there are lots of uncertainties out there right now. And I think the main concern, I think everyone probably knows that the main concern is inflation. So that's why everyone's honing in on what the Federal Reserve is going to do, right? So if the Federal Reserve are going to hike, I don't know, 75 basis points, but they already have already recently. And so they've hiked up the basis points, and then now people are like, oh, like, are they going to hike up even more? Or like, is inflation going to drop down very fast over the next few months that the Federal Reserve will have to start cutting rates again, right? So I think there are a lot of uncertainties there. I think everyone's pretty much hinging their thesis on where inflation rates are going to go. So I do I can't say for sure when inflation is going to come down. I do think it will come down eventually because, of course, inflation in general hinges on many things, right? But right now, I would say that the main thing that is keeping inflation persistent is supply chain issues that are happening globally right now. And so eventually, supply chain issues are going to ease and then inflation is going to drop. So we have famous investors like Michael Burry talking about this. I think he calls this a bullwhip effect, right? When the supply chain issues, they sort themselves out, then inflation can actually, they actually has a multiplier effect and then inflation drops down very fast. So in that case, you know, like if you believe that thesis, then it could be the case that the Federal Reserve are being overly aggressive at the moment, right? We're also looking at other indicators, for example, like the labor market as well and how the American labor market is doing. The stronger the American labor market is doing, the more inflationary, so to speak, that phenomenon is. So when you have people's wages increasing and unemployment rates keeping down low, more money will be spent, basically. There'll be more money for everyone and there'll be more people spending money as well, which will also drive prices up, right? So these are some of the factors that keep inflation persisting. And it actually seems to be the case that the inflation will persist for relatively high levels for at least the next year. But the thing is, right, the market is not always the economy, right? The market is always forward-looking. So there are people who are looking at the macroeconomic indicators and trying to time the market. But actually, at the same time, there are also pockets in the market as well where you're able to make money. So I think in the general sense, you should stay invested, but maybe a bit less so. Because I've also spoke to some of my peers and they're like 60% cash, 70% cash in their portfolios. I do think that is quite high because some of my peers are trying to time the market, so to speak. So, of course, they're also looking at other important indicators like the PMI, for example, the Purchase Managers Index in the US. So you got the manufacturing side, you got the non-manufacturing side as well. So these are all, and they have actually a very high correlation with the S&P 500. Okay, so in that sense, then yes, it does seem that the S&P 500 has a way to go on the downside if you're looking mainly at the manufacturing and the services PMI. So yes, but at the same time, there are other certain parts of the market as well where we're still making some money, right? So I think it really is the case where if you're looking at stocks, then you have to be quite selective and conservative with your valuation as well.
You're talking about supply chain issues. Where do you feel like the war and energy, the energy shortage and energy crisis plays into maybe some of the supply stuff and macroeconomically, how you think that's affecting the markets as well?
Okay, for example, you have wheat as a commodity, right? I can't remember what the percentage is, but I think in Russia and Ukraine, quite a lot of wheat comes from there. So in the beginning of the war, some people who were following the price of wheat realized that the price was jumping maybe almost 50%. I can't remember what it was, but it was very, very high, right? But now it's dropped down below pre-war as well. So we're starting to see like some commodities who have dropped to levels almost pre-pandemic or at least pre-war as well. So these are some of the aspects where inflation has dropped. But I mean, to answer your question, yeah, I think in the beginning as well, the Russia-Ukraine war was contributing to some of the supply chain. So of course, some people were concerned about the supply of gas, specifically neon gas, I think it was, for the semiconductor supply chain, and then the supply of wheat. And then now they are concerned about the supply of gas to Europe as well, which is causing a huge spike in energy costs for a lot of the European producers over there. So yeah, I think this doesn't answer your question. Like these are some of the aspects of how it's contributing to inflation. But at the same time, one is able to still sort of, if you are lucky enough to find a stock that actually benefits from this, of course, I'm not trying to advocate the idea that people should be profiting from war. But if you're lucky enough to find a thesis where find a company where they are in a way profiting from it, then that helps a lot. So, okay, for example, in Malaysia, we have a producer, a silicon metal producer. So basically silicon metal is largely used in the automotive industry, as well as the semiconductor and the solar cells industry. So in the renewables energy. So some of these producers have secured very, very low electricity costs. So now that a lot of their European peers in China, their peers in China as well as in Europe, are suffering from really high energy costs because of the war. One of the reasons, because of the war, the other reason is climate change as well. It's causing a drought, right? For example, climate change is causing droughts in a couple of places in China, which increases the price for hydropower, for example. So then increases the price for electricity. And then in Europe, you have gas, the shortage of gas causing a spike in electricity costs, which then in turn make it much more less profitable or even loss-making for all the other peers of this silicon metal producer, right? So then recently, over the past month or so, this certain producer in Malaysia has been, their share price has gone up quite a bit because, or just purely because of this fact, not because the price of silicon metal has gone up, but more like investors are starting to realize that the competitive advantage of this producer. So just to give an example for your question.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like there's pockets of opportunity around the world, yeah, based on, I guess, isolated events, even though the whole supply chain, global supply chain is so complex. It's not just isolated to what's happening with the Ukrainian and Russian war. There are so many, I guess, backlogs around the world in terms of all the other potential raw materials and other supplies that are going around that are impacting this as well. So, yeah, I think from that, it just sounds like we need to do our due diligence, yeah, if we are going to put our money somewhere.
Yeah, of course.
And of course, yeah, I'm not saying that we should go after profiteering from what's happening with the war, but like you said, there's definitely some opportunity out there as well. Cool. So we are wrapping up this podcast now, Leon. Before we do finish up, is there anything we haven't asked you that we should have?
To be honest, I don't think so. But yeah, I think if there are any questions that come to mind, I'd be very happy to answer on Instagram or anywhere else. Yeah, very, very happy to give any form of value to your listeners as well.
Sure. So just for the listeners out there, Leon, what is your Instagram? How can they get in contact with you?
Okay, so my personal Instagram is Leon Jake Lim. So that's LeonJakeLim. My Badminton Academy, we have an Instagram as well. It's called JS_Badminton Academy.
Fantastic. So yeah, we'll pop that in the description for all those listeners. And so I guess once again, from Jeff, myself, and the listeners of the Badminton Podcast, we thank you for coming onto this episode, Leon.
Thank you. It was an honor. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Leon.
Thanks so much.
So from Henry and I at the Badminton Podcast, thanks for tuning in to this episode. If you've enjoyed it or found it useful, be sure to share it with your family, friends, teammates, and someone outside your badminton circle too, because with your help, we can show the world how incredible badminton is.
To keep up to date with new episodes and who we're interviewing next, make sure you connect with us on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn at the Badminton Podcast, and on Twitter at the Badminton Pod. Feel free to contact us and ask any questions, give us feedback, or request topics for future episodes. We love hearing from you. And remember to check out and shop for your simple and minimalist badminton gear at volantwear.com. Catch you on the next episode.
Bye.